This is the Real Estate Podcast, the intersection between the latest trends in real estate and its impact on our everyday lives. We're your hosts, Alex Norman
and Jamie Blonde, and you've come to the right location. The real estate starts now. In today's episode, Wine, Art, and Miami, we explore Miami's growing wine culture and its intersection with the arts. Today's guest is Alexa Farah, Senior Director of Marketing and Communication at the Perez Art Museum Miami, a wine blogger at alexaswinediary.com, and a podcaster at Pouring Over Pages, a show that's available everywhere. And for more real estate podcast content from Alex and I, please check out the Real Estate Podcast YouTube channel. Alexa, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, Alexa.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Alexa, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Miami, probably one of the few Miami natives that you may know. I know a lot of people have moved down here recently. I was a theater kid growing up and fell in love with marketing and communications at the University of Miami. So I'm always a Canes fan. I've held various positions at different institutions in Miami, from the University of Miami to different agencies like the Conroy Martinez Group and Republica. But my career really took off at Perez Art Museum Miami. I joined the institution back when it was Miami Art Museum in 2011 and supported it to its monumental transition to PAM, now Perez Art Museum Miami, as its current iteration. And because I'm not busy enough with all these things, I have my own passion projects, including a wine blog, Alexa's Wine Diary, and a podcast called Pouring Over Pages.
Well, Alexa, so thank you for being here. I mean, you have quite an impressive story, and we wanted our episode to be about wine and how location, is linked, obviously. But with your background in the arts, I'm compelled to explore the relationship between wine and art. So tell us about your journey and how you got into wine, but then also tell us about your role, in Perez Art Museum, your wine blog, your diary, your podcast, and your passions for all things cultural.
Yeah. So at heart, I am a marketer. I'm a marketing communications person at heart. And luckily, you could transfer that skill into any industry, whether it's art or wine. So I've been at PAM for over 13 years, which is kind of insane, especially for a millennial. back when I started, it was housed in a really small building near Government Center. It was like two floors, but it was very dark and small, and you can only really host a few exhibitions at a time. And then we moved to a gorgeous facility on Biscayne Bay, along with the renaming of the museum. It's like comparing in scale, I'd say, like a tricycle to a Formula One race car. So I've held six different positions within the department, currently as Senior Director of Marketing Communications, as I mentioned here, but I started off as an assistant. So I really grew into the role and into the institution and worked in everywhere from the PR to social media to email newsletters. And now I oversee it all, everything from PR to brand identity to content strategy and just more. And it's been so fun and rewarding to see the institution grow and me grow with it and do all these great campaigns with a small but very mighty team.
Nice.
Well, I will say, for the record, I think it's a tremendous museum. It's probably the most prestigious museum in Miami. And I was on the Collectors Council for a couple of years. I was there when we chose the Wei Wei jade handcuffs, which are part of the permanent
collection. Oh, those are nice. Yes, I remember that.
That came through I was one of the voters for us to acquire that piece for the museum. So I have a history of the museum, and so thank you for all the work you do there, because it really is a cornerstone of the art scene here in Miami, which needs more of that, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. Miami is becoming a global city in and of itself, and global and great cities have art museums and arts and culture scenes. So it's nice to be part of that change in Miami. Back when, when the museum was voted to get its new building in Biscayne Bay, it was in the 80s, and now it came to fruition in 2013. So it's a journey, but we're on the way up. So
It's what's interesting about it is you can't really talk about Miami and its art museum, PAM, without talking about Art Basel, right? So we're just now off the heels of a really exciting week, and every year it's the talk of the town and the world about what's being sold or who showed up and had a party, etc. And what it does, though, it brings people, connoisseurs, obviously people interested in art, but also people who are interested in culture, into Miami for a week of celebration, of acquisition, and all of that. But also people come here to eat, and to wine and dine, and bring with them a industry perhaps that explodes, perhaps even for a week or more. So tell us a little bit about what the importance of wine in Miami is in general, but also perhaps what has the influx of art and culture done to this really interesting industry here in Miami with wine.
No, definitely. When I started my journey back in 2017, that's when I started the blog and really dove into all things wine. There wasn't a ton going on in Miami's wine scene. I mean, you had a few staple wine shops here and there. Florida Wine Academy, an amazing school, was there. And you had a couple events like South Beach Wine and Food Festival. It's a massive event, but it's like the event you think of. And over time, more trade events would come down to Miami, more influencer and press outreach would happen. And like you said, people want to come down, wine and dine. We have so many more Michelin star restaurants now than we ever did. I feel like the food and wine scene has exploded. And now everyone's looking down at Miami and being like, that's the spot to be. We've gotten more major trade shows like Vinexpo America, which is huge in the wine world, has always been in New York. Next year is coming to Miami.
Whoa.
It will be in Miami.
James, that's huge.
Yeah, it's massive. And James Suckling, he's, you know, well-known wine critic, has his list and everything. He hosts a great Wines of the World event that's been in Hong Kong, New York, I think San Francisco too. And it started coming down to Miami in the past few years and been very successful. So it's funny to see that shift of like, everyone just thought Miami was beaches and partying. And now it's like art and culture and food and drink. And even during Art Basel, like you were saying, wine brands come down here to have their own events. I believe Pommery was the exclusive champagne for, I want to say, Untitled Art Fair. Perrier-Jouët did a few events too. So it's fun to see. I'm like, oh, you guys are here for Basel? Like, yeah, but we're doing like a week's worth of wine events. I'm like, oh, great. Like, they know everyone's down here. It's the place to be. And then there's just such a natural intersection between wine and art. I mean, wine is an art form, and then art, you know, is clearly art. So they tie well, and the audiences are so similar. So it's great to see the evolution down here.
Well, it's definitely the case that the huge COVID migration brought a new group of people to Miami and to Florida that have demands that are consistent with the demands they had for the quality of life they had where they're coming from, be it LA, be it New York. And we'll get into that in a little bit about different cities. But clearly the people who drive the demand, and the demand is now growing here. So you see the result of that demand. You see the opening of restaurants, the opening, the more marketing by wineries, events being held. And so I think that's a good thing. I think there's a certain amount of culture, and I guess museum art and wine, that kind of falls under the umbrella of culture. Culture is growing and expanding here beyond just the Latin American culture or the Afrocentric culture from the Caribbean. That was kind of the culture that started in Miami and is now expanding into other areas. And with that comes the demand for not only a good dry cleaner and a good private school, but a good bottle of wine at the restaurant, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, actually, on top of that, I think you raise a bunch of different points here that I want to just jump on. So first and foremost, the pandemic obviously was an important driver in wine sales across the board. I mean, when I moved down to Miami during the pandemic, I was buying wine by the case. And so, I wouldn't consider myself a wine drinker, even though when I lived in Los Angeles, I learned wine and New World wines, et cetera. Cabernets are my thing. But like during the pandemic, I was just consuming it just nonstop. And so I feel like there is perhaps a distribution boom, right? Not just obviously distributing for restaurants, but also for, you know, for public consumption, I think is also something to be said. And I wonder, is there a distribution story here? So the distributors that have grown and see now wine as a region, so more wine growers around the world are interested in introducing their wines here. Is that something?
So I've been working with the brand Klink Different on this campaign between Germany and Bordeaux on wine program, where they want to show the comparisons between the two regions and also the differences and show that they're great for everyday occasions, whether it be holiday or getting together. So I've been working with that team now for 2 years, and their main targets have been Florida, Texas, and California. So I hadn't really heard that much about Florida before, that being like a prime demographic market there. But yeah, they've for the past 2 years have been trying to get more of their wines down in Florida as well as Texas and California. But Florida is like a shocking one for me, because in my mind, I'm like, yeah, we drink wine down here. But it's nice to see that now other regions, like you're saying, are noticing that how it's a great market for food, travel. It's booming with the people to drink the wine. So, and they're not the only ones. There have been other producers that I've worked with that are trying to break further into the Florida market. So yeah, there is something to say about that and the migration down here that's piquing their interest.
Well, it's interesting you brought up you're a marketer, because I think when it comes to a lot of these consumer products and certainly brands, there's so much marketing and sales that goes into creating demand. I mean, you see it on the spirit side with celebrities. You see it in the wine side. It's always been more the country of origin, the region where the grape is grown. But even in wine, I remember Francis Ford Coppola had his wine, you know, and Orson Welles used to advertise, we'll sell no wine before it's time. And that was Gallo. But for me, wine was always a very mystifying thing. Like, I can walk into a restaurant, if I open the menu, there are wines that I know that I like, that if I recognize Prisoner or a Valpolicella, I know what it is, I know that I like it. But in general, I'm not knowledgeable, I'm not an expert like a lot of people are, or a lot of people really jump into the whole wine culture. Do you see, how do you see that demystifying wine for the average drinker? How do we bring people who are not knowledgeable into the fold and start to enjoy and care about wine?
Yeah, wine has a bad reputation traditionally, you know, in the past, of being very old, pale, stale, male. So that is a turnoff for a lot of young wine drinkers like me. When I was starting my journey, it was kind of intimidating to be the only woman in a room at a tasting full of old men. And I'm like, okay, well, this is fun. Awesome. Can't wait. But luckily, I mean, over the years, I mean, at least as long as I've been in this, I've seen a lot of, I hate using the word influencers, but like other content creators, other bloggers, other podcasters who are similar in age, I guess the millennial group, and different races, ethnicities, sexes, all across the board, just different perspectives going into wine and the journey of wine, and making it okay that no, you don't have to know everything about wine. No, you don't have to buy the most expensive bottle to have a good experience, and showing you that it's okay not to know everything. There is possibly no way of knowing everything about wine. I think I read something somewhere, the master of wine exam is harder than like taking the bar. So you will never know everything, and it's okay. And just making it more approachable and inclusive, and that wine should be for everyone, not just for a few. And that's kind of what I also aim to do on my blog.
You know, I feel like the wine industry across the board has lost a little bit of that exclusivity in a good way. Sort of it's sort of democratized in some way for more people to have more access. And I think a lot of that has contributed over the years to some of the lower cost wines, or bringing price points down to size, some import, you know, and tariff, you know, deals that have been made that have gotten really good wines from different parts of the world into our cupboards, you know, at home, etc. But you know, when it comes to regions, I feel like there is an interesting difference between the cultivation and the consumption, right? And so you have places in the U.S. like Napa and sort of the Northern California region, and then which are great, obviously, where the wine comes from. And then you have important regions, as you mentioned earlier in the show, like New York, that are just there's no. I mean, I'm sure there's some wines that grow in, you know, somewhere in by Albany or, you know, New York, but in New York City, for the most part, is the consumption Mecca. And the fact that consumption is now being shifted to Miami makes Miami a very interesting market for the industry at large. So I find that, you know, the sort of the difference between the two. And then when I started doing some research in advance of the show, I was realizing, of course, there are wines that are grown in Miami, albeit because of the warm weather and I guess Pierce's disease, not a lot of grapes and vines can actually grow in this region, but there are a couple. So, okay. So can you unpack for us the kind of the relationship between sort of Florida and its cultivation, you know, sort of roots, you know, to use a pun, and the consumption growth and how that's perhaps meshing together.
Yeah, I wouldn't drink anything from Florida. Like, I'm not gonna.
Got it. All right.
Certain places can make good wine because of the terroir. Like, we don't have good terroir here at all.
Maiden day, but not my wine, right? Okay, guys.
No, not my wine. No,
I think we have the hardest water in the country, which I would imagine is probably not good for wine. All those minerals and probably affect the taste and everything. But I will say that, speaking of, a region and more people coming into the industry, there are so many places now where you can get information about wine. When I was young and growing up, the only real way you could get information was if you attended a sommelier class and you spent a lot of time with experts in the industry. Now, I know, for example, myself, I read a great book called Wine Simple by Aldo Somme, who's a sommelier of Le Bernard, which is often considered the best restaurant in the world, really demystifying it. I joined a wine club at Macchialina, one of my favorite restaurants in Miami.
They're delicious.
Where the director there, Jacqueline Parolo, is tremendous. And so every month I pick up two bottles of wine that are 20, 25 bucks from different regions that I don't even know about, that I've never heard of before, that I would never find. And what she's doing, which is very interesting, and I'm curious to get your take on this, is she is associating the wine purchases with different things we're going through in the calendar. Black History Month, Black owned vineyards, Women's Month, women owned wineries, and incorporating a lot of the cultural changes in our society and the opportunities for different people in the wine that we're drinking, and making that more relevant to our choices and the places we can support in our drinking of the wine. Do you see that, and how do you approach that?
Yeah, I think good wine is good wine, but what gives you the connection with the wine is the storytelling behind it. Who makes the wine? What is their story? You know, what humanizes them? Because I could buy a bottle anywhere, you know, but it's really the people that are making the wine that I'm interested in. We do that on the podcast. We pair wine with books. Maritza, my partner in crime, she's the bookworm, and she picks books that are, you know, usually based around current events, or months, like you're saying, like Women's History Month, Black History Month. And then I pair the wine with the book, depending on the theme or the main character or whatever it may be. Like, we have, you know, books and wine pairings for Pride. We have books and wine pairings for, you know, Native American, you know, Day. We have different things like that. And I think it's important to bring these stories to the forefront that may have otherwise been forgotten or lost, and showcasing newer perspectives in the wine industry. And I think that's a great way of doing it, making it relatable and attainable in that way.
So tell us, so give us an example. How would you pair wine with, like, what was the most difficult wine pairing, I guess, that you've experienced that you could share?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to, because a lot of these are great, like the months and stuff, because I could do a ton of research and dive in and usually find a producer that I get in contact with. And those have been easy. It's kind of like when it's the most obscure location that has no tie to a region, that has that's strange in nature, like dark comedies or something. Like, there was one, I Love You, But I've Chosen Darkness, I think was the title of the book. And it's just like this white
lady. What an uplifting book.
Right? And it's like just this white lady who had a baby who's just having a total mental breakdown and like goes off in the desert. I'm like, okay, what do I pair with that?
So a dark, full body, dry wine.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, at that point I have to go with, what does it make me feel? What wine feels like that? Is it? So sometimes I take creative liberties like you just did.
Nice. So have you lived in Miami your whole life, or have you lived other places?
Born and raised, never, but every time I thought about leaving, opportunities came. So it's been good for me here.
Nice. And so as a New Yorker myself, Jamie, you've lived all over the world, for the most part, right? All over the world, right? I guess,
I've been kicked out of some of the best countries in the world.
Right. So we all have our own wine preferences, right? So I come from New York and I have my thing, but I lived in Los Angeles, Jamie, et cetera. And all the people that have moved to Miami, and have created, obviously too much traffic, for those that care, have brought their preferences, have brought their tastes and brought their interests to this town. And and obviously what's really amazing about Macchiolina, as Jamie just pointed out, the fact that they're curating an experience for customers, introducing wines from different places. But are there just natural interests or demands for certain types of wines that you've been seeing based on the diversity of or where people are coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to down here, a lot of the population's Hispanic and speak Spanish. So I think they're more comfortable reading a label from Spain, that's more familiar to them than, maybe a French label from Burgundy or, Alsace or something. And so, yeah, I mean, I think wines from Spain run a lot in this market, South American wines too, because we have a big heavy influx there. I think in general, everyone down here is just all about champagne and rosé because it's so
Right.
hot. It's so hot too. But yeah, I mean, and I think there's a few places down here that do a great job of keeping their finger on the pulse and kind of figuring out what people want. Vinya is a great restaurant that does a lot of BYOB events. They also host classes and tastings. They do a lot out there. I see them on Instagram posting like all the time. So if you know nothing at all about wine and just want a very informal way of getting into it, they're a great resource. Florida Wine Academy, it sounds like a school, and it is, but you could also take like one-off classes if you want to learn about wine or sake or, I remember I took a natural wine class there like years ago, and it was like interesting because when you think natural wine, you think, oh, it's all tastes like piss. Like it's all like really funky, weird, and terrible tasting. But they had really great producers because all natural wine is not crappy. And
Well,
I
yeah,
stand on that. I
I gotta
stand on
tell you,
that.
but my wine education pretty much begins and ends at Total Wine.
Which is fine. They have lots of descriptors on the label. They have,
Well, listen, that's a great, that is, superstores are dying left and right. There's no more Bed Bath and Beyond. There's no more Design Shoe Warehouse, but that Total Wine is a great superstore, no doubt. And to your point, Alex, there is so many ways to get information now about wine. The other day, I'm scrolling through Instagram. I came across a blogger who was talking about a Valpolicella at Trader Joe's for $16. I go in there, I buy it. It's delicious.
Yeah,
And it's
it's great.
$16.
Yeah, you can never discount a wine because of the price. You just got to taste it and see for yourself.
Okay, so this is a great example of that point. Jamie and I, we were in Florence, a bunch of years ago, with two Spaniards. Okay, so and then they give me the honor of picking out the wine, because actually I was going to a buddy of mine's wedding, in Abruzzo, and he has a Montepulciano vineyard, and a really good wine that he produces out of that region. So of course they're like, oh, okay, well, since you're going, your buddy is in the business, why don't you have the honor of selecting the wine? Okay, so I'm gonna but I also am an American, right? So
Yeah,
then
yeah.
I'm just an idiot, essentially. So
Of
I go,
course, we all are.
so I don't know. It's all literally Chinese. I mean, it's an Italian, but it's like it's not. I can't read it, right?
Yeah,
And so I'm going through this list, and of course, what do I know? I know the price. So I look at something that's not too expensive, but just expensive enough to be respectable, right?
yeah.
So then we finished the bottle in like 10 minutes. Okay. And then
Nice.
one of the guys says, oh, okay, let's order the next bottle. Alex, which bottle did you buy? And when I told them, they almost lost they almost lost their, I mean, they just literally were like, their mouth is dropped. And it's like, why did you spend, you're spending this much money on the bottle of wine? And it says, look, I said, you're American. Let me educate you. Here's how it works. In Spain, the first bottle is $40. The second bottle is $30. The third bottle is $20, and the fourth bottle, you know, is whatever we can drink, without falling over. And it just dawned on me that you know, in America, we cherish that $120 or $200 bottle, and we think that's it. Like we drink one, and that's enough.
But it's more than that. I think it's more than that. It's also the fact that in the United States, you can't go into a restaurant and get a bottle for $40. That's going to be a good bottle of wine. That's going to be some find of a restaurant. Right. I'll tell you right now, normally in the United States, the cheapest bottle starts at $70, $80 or $60 or something like that.
Yeah.
Right. And Alexa, you tell me, cause I heard that, restaurants are very smart. Okay. They make the biggest markup on the second cheapest bottle of wine because they're assuming that most people come in, don't know what to order. They're there on a date. The guy doesn't want to order the cheapest wine. He figures he'll order the second cheapest wine and get a good bottle and still keep it at a reasonable price. And the restaurants know that. So the worst deal in the restaurant is the second cheapest bottle of wine. That true or is that not true?
So I haven't worked in restaurants before, but my friends that are the somms there and do price out the wines, they keep it straight across the board. I forget what the markup is. I want to say it's like two or three times. I think it's like three times the markup of the bottle. But they try to, at least the ones that I know, try to keep it same markup across the board.
Well, that's another thing, right? That's the same thing as percentage of tips. You used to tip 15%. Then everybody said you had to tip 18%. Then they said you had to tip 20%.
Yeah.
You know, and you say, why? I said, well, because the cost of prices of food is going up. Like, what, the price of food is going up, the percentage covers that. Right? You don't have to change a percentage. It's the same thing with wine. It used to be you went into a restaurant, nice restaurant, and the wine markup was 100%. If the bottle was 50 in the store, you were in the restaurant, it cost you $100. Now the markup is 300-400%. And I don't understand why. All that they're doing is, I think, just making more profit off the consumer. I don't think there's any reason for that. Do you disagree?
I mean, I think it's just our culture, unfortunately. Look at the rich keep getting richer and the poor keep getting poorer. Amazon has amassed how much wealth recently?
And well, maybe that's why in Europe
the eggs are still
$40 and you can't get a bottle for less than $140 here because maybe the markups are different in those countries versus in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, the value of wine in Europe is always going to be much better value than here. Everything is just so much more, I feel like everything's just so much more expensive here. Like in Napa, for example, like you're saying, the bottles demand higher prices because their costs are much higher over there. I think it's just a different society. And also, I mean, we get them imported, so they're a little bit pricier over here. But when you're in Italy and you're buying a bottle that's like $15 and it's drinking way above its weight, like it's not moving that far and it's right there and it's coming from the source. It's just different.
Yeah, we had a couple of shows around farming and sustainable farming and vertical farming, etc. And one of the themes that have come up within farming is the transportation costs from, you know, from that farm to, you know, to that table, et cetera. And, you know, obviously we can't forget that the wine industry is actually a farming industry.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so it has, where it grows, the soil, all that stuff matters, the climate, the temperature, the mere fact that, you know, the earth is rotating. As a result, impacts a lot of what we drink and what we consume. So I hear that point, but you know, I think when it comes down to it, wine is in some ways, I guess it's something you consume and it's an alcoholic beverage. So not everyone can partake in it. We've seen a lot of trends in non-alcoholic wines and spirits, etc., to open up the market a little bit. We're also seeing that in these recent articles about the decline of alcohol consumption among younger folks, millennials, whatever the next generation.
I think Gen Z. They're the ones.
Yeah, they're the ones, right? They're killing it. They're everyone, right? So, all right. So, you know, are we going to see a decline over time, or are we going to see an uptick? Like, what inflection point do you think we're right at the precipice of that's going to impact the wine industry from now into the future?
Yeah, and that's hard to say because you're right. I mean, wine alcohol consumption in general is down with the newer, Gen Z and whatnot. They prefer, like you're saying, non-alcoholic or smoking pot or whatever. I don't know what they prefer. I'll ask my siblings.
Hey, don't knock everything else. I don't
But it's just different. It's a different consumption habit. So I
know.
currently I've seen a couple of non-alcoholic wines in the market. They're not that great. There was one I tried in Germany that was really awesome, but it's in Germany, and the cost of them to get it over here isn't worth it. Like what they'll sell it for, it's just not worth it. And then, also like they don't make that much of it. So that's an interesting. I've seen more and more people trying to break into that space. We'll see. So, I see that kind of stuff, which is depressing for me, a wine lover. But then I see other things like, when I was in Germany, all of the wineries were like family owned and operated, and the next generations were getting all excited about taking over, and they were very involved in the process and getting into wine and making their own footprint, imprint on the market. So it's hard to say, and then throw climate change in there, and it's getting harder to make the wine. And it's just, I mean, you don't make wine to make money. You make wine because you love it. It's kind of
Ooh,
what
that's a good
gave.
point. So yeah, right. So wine is more of a check. It's not like charity. It's like
It's your love. Your love
the
pouring into
show,
the
right, the charity of love of giving, right?
earth. So it's hard.
I think there's also another aspect of it that we haven't addressed. Alex and I on this podcast, we do a lot of episodes where we try to talk about health and health trends and in every aspect of life, from where you live to what you eat to what we're farming. There's been a lot of news lately on alcohol being much worse than we thought it was to the system. It used to be when I grew up that the common thought was that a glass or two of wine, red wine, was actually good for you, good for your heart. That has now been debunked, and the newest research out is that any amount of alcohol is poisonous. Now, everything in life in moderation, including moderation. I'm not suggesting we shouldn't have a drink or drinks, but do you think that trend, that health trend of starting to view alcohol differently, is going to have an effect on the industry in general, or do you think that's a minor issue right now?
I think it's minor right now because the people that are going to drink are going to continue to drink. Like Alex and I work out a lot. We go to CrossFit together. We work out a lot. We lift heavy weights, throw them down, and I'm still making time for a glass of wine. Like I'm not too concerned. I think, like you said, moderation and balance and everything, because I could be keeping it away from me, the wine, but then my milk and my cheese have other contaminants in them that are going to get me in a different way, or toxins over here or there. So I think it's just kind of doing everything in moderation and just drinking what you want.
Yeah, I think it's such a really good point. You should be happy. I think not. I think just the mere fact that everything in life is trying to kill us,
Yeah, everything's bad for you now.
including time itself, right? So I mean, enjoy it while you
Well, you
got it, right?
can.
I mean, it's pretty much
Smoke them if you got them.
it's right. Drink them if you
Exactly.
got them.
Do what you
What are you gonna do, right?
want.
So look, Alexa, I want to thank you for sharing your insights on the show with us and our listeners. I mean, your passion and your enthusiasm for wine is incredible. I hope our audience feels the passion and enthusiasm as much as we have on this show. All great work that you're doing with the Perez Art Museum in Miami. Great work you're doing with your blog, and those that want to tune in and hear more of Alexa, please go to alexaswinediary.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Go visit it and go subscribe. So listen, thank you very much for being on with us, and looking forward to hearing more of your great work in the future.
Thank you, Alexa, so much for coming on as well. We look forward to having a glass of wine with you sometime soon in the future.
Definitely. I'm here for it.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Podcast. Give us a quick review and rating on iTunes. Check out our website at therealestate.co and let us know if there are any new topics you'd like to hear us address. We love hearing your feedback. See you next week.